Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. My name is Dirk, I'm your host, and we are approaching weekend 11 of this year, 2018. And we have a special episode for you. We have recorded our live on stage podcast during our Lake Life Expo in Fargo a couple weeks back. And we would like to share the very first recording with you during this podcast. So please stay tuned to hear from Brand Alcott from the Pelican Watershed District to speak about shoreline protection. And then we have Moriah Rufer from R&B Laboratories speak about the water clarity program, and also Nathan Olson from the DNR fishery department here in Detroit Lakes, Becker County, speaking about fishery services for our lakes and all those things. That was a really interesting event and a really nice little on-stage program that we are happy to share with you. Unfortunately, the sound quality is a little bit different than in our sound booth here, so I apologize for that. We have to practice that a little bit more, but it was still a very nice little get-together, and please stay tuned to hear from that. And before we start, I would like to thank again our sponsor for this podcast here, At Ease Dock and Lift in Frazee. You heard previously, they're a really great outfit if you consider to upgrade or change your dock and lift system this season. Visit them on Highway 10, just outside of Detroit Lakes, right before Frazee there. You can approach John or Mike at Ease Dock and Lift, and they will consult you, advise you, and equip you with the latest and greatest for your lake life experience on the lake. So, I don't want to keep this any longer. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for our interviews with Nathan, Mariah, and Brandt. Thank you, and have a wonderful weekend. We thought we'd start with the watershed district to kind of talk water coming to the lake. Then we were going to speak about the water and the clarity, and then what happens in the water. We will finish this little program off. So, well, thanks again for coming. Welcome to our first live on stage podcast here at the Explore Lake Life Expo at the Civic Center in downtown Fargo. And I turn this mic over to Brandt Alcott, and you introduce yourself and talk.
All right, thank you. My name is Brandt Alcott. I work for the Pelican River Watershed District in Detroit Lakes. I kind of have two portions of my job. One is water quality monitoring in our lakes and streams, making sure that our lakes are healthy. If I do have any trends that are declining, we can kind of identify those and then look for different projects that we can implement on the landscape to help reduce the amount of nutrients or pollutants that are getting into our lakes and streams. The other portion of my job is working with people that are developing land, both in business and residential areas, to help show them how they can develop responsibly to minimize the amount of nutrients or pollutants that get down into our lakes and streams. The reason that's an issue is as we develop, we change the landscape. And as the landscape changes, the amount of runoff that comes off of that landscape is increased both in the quantity and the rate. And when you do that, you have an increase in the pollutants getting down to the water, reducing our health of our lakes and streams. Some things that people can do on the landscape if they're a residential property owner or a lakeshore owner is just maintaining vegetation. Buffers along shorelines are a really good way to help filter out a lot of those nutrients and water that's coming down into the lake.
That's my job. Thank you. Since you were so quick and I can ask some questions, you're located in Becker County.
What I found is interesting to learn from you in the past was that you are actually, you're like a governing body, like you're involved, you're an authority. Yeah, I like for people to understand that you're a helping tool to protect and prevent. Yeah, you too.
So watershed districts are a special unit of government that are that were formed by the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Our watershed district was formed 50 years ago on petition from the residents in our area. The reason we were formed was for water quality issues. Lake Sally, which is downstream of Detroit Lake, and the city of Detroit Lakes had severely impaired water 60, 70 years ago, most in part due to the release of septic water from the city of Detroit Lakes before they had modern sewage treatment systems. So Lake Sally was highly impaired. There was times that the algae blooms were so bad that ducks could physically walk on top of the water. I heard of stories of people mounting outboard motors to their docks to blow algae blooms back out into the lake to keep them away. So they petitioned the Board of Water and Soil Resources to form a watershed district that could have some rules and some regulations as far as what you can do on the landscape and what you can do with your property to help keep our lakes clean and protect our natural resources. We've had a lot of progress. Lake Sally is no longer impaired. It's kind of along the edge. It's an interesting lake that has a lot of those legacy sediments legacy nutrients that are in the sediments that that still cause some algae bloom issues. But we've come a long way.
Easy fix. I think that helps. Is there any question from someone while we have Brent up here? Okay, then I would like to have Mariah continue with Water Clarity.
Thanks, yes. My name is Mariah Roofer, and I work at RMB Environmental Laboratories in Detroit Lakes. And I grew up going to a cabin on Leech Lake. If you're familiar with it, it's the third largest or in the state, I think, and a great fishing lake. And I really fell in love with being on lakes, catching fish, and then also seeing the other things in the lake that depend on it, the fish, the wildlife, even the aquatic insects, the leeches. I know it's called Leech Lake because they have really big leeches. But they all play a role in the ecosystem of the lake. So I was really interested in that. So I went to school for biology and then really ended up specializing in lakes and in the little creatures that live in the lakes, mainly the invertebrates, which would be the bugs, the crayfish, snails, mussels or clams that live in the lake, the leeches too. So what species are in the lake can tell you about the lake's water quality. So it's fun to catch them, see what's in there, and they tell you about the water quality. Those are also the main food for the fish that we like to catch, and a lot of the wildlife that lives around the lake. So eagles, bald eagles, rely a lot on the lake for food. Frogs, turtles that live around the lake. So they all need certain conditions to be able to live by the lake. They need natural shorelines for nesting, loons, that is, in particular. Loons need shoreline to nest in to hide their babies. They need clear water to be able to see when they're catching their food. And there's other types of species that live in the lakes that can tell us how clean the water is. So at RMB Environmental Laboratories, we are a water testing lab. And we're in Detroit Lakes, but we really work statewide in Minnesota and North and South Dakota. So we have a pretty large reach from Detroit Lakes. We do have some other offices now. We have an office in Bloomington, in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and also in Watford City, North Dakota. So we test drinking water. So if you live by a lake or live in the country, you have a well. We test that well water to make sure it's safe to drink. For nitrates, bacteria, and arsenic are kind of the main ones. Lead is also, if you have an old house that has lead pipes or lead solder, we can test for that as well. My specialty is working with the lakes and the streams. So we have a lake monitoring program that is made up of volunteers that live on the lakes. We work with over 500 lakes in Minnesota every summer. And in the spring, we train them. We go county to county, train the volunteers. These are people that live on the lake that have volunteered to be the lake monitor. So we train them on how to collect the samples. We give them the supplies that they need. And then they go out on the lake once a month, May through September, so five times in the summer. They collect a water sample, and then they bring it to our lab, or they ship it if they're a long ways away, because we do work statewide. And then we run the lab tests on that data, and we have an online database on our website that where it reports the results for that lake. So anybody can look up the results for any of the lakes that's in our program. It's all public data, because at the end of the summer, we send all that data down to the statewide database at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency so that they can use that data for their statewide planning and statewide reports. So if you're interested in the water quality of any of the lakes, in Becker County, Otter Tail County, we work with most of the big lakes. They are in our database. So our booth is right behind the Paul Davis one there. And we have little cards that has links for our website. But it's rmbel.info. And then if you click on the Lakes Monitoring Program link, you'll get to the database. So you could look up data on any of the lakes. You can also look up data for the like Detroit Lake and Sally and Melissa from the Pelican River Watershed District website, or reports, not the raw data. But so it's really neat that you know, we work with over 500 lakes, but we're not the ones out collecting all those samples. It's volunteers that live on the lakes. So it's a huge commitment, and but we get really valuable data from those really committed volunteers. So it's really fun to work with them. And then we do speak at meetings to help them understand the data, or we can put together little reports. On our website, where you look up the data, you can also generate graphs of it and have all sorts of nice little handouts straight from our website. So if you're interested in a certain lake, I encourage you to look it up and check it out.
I didn't really know. I live on a lake too, one of the cleanest in the area, I always say. Lake Seven, it's a clean lake. And I was always wondering how you measure the depth, because people always say, like, proudly, oh, my lake has a water clarity of, I think Lake Seven has 21 feet, which is like 7 meters. And I'm like, how on the earth is that possible? But how do you measure this? Maybe some, like, explain how the volunteers do take that measurement.
Sure. Yeah, so Lake Seven is a very nice, clear lake. That data is on our website for Lake Seven. You can look up a report. So the way that the volunteers test for the water clarity is using a Secchi disc. And I should have brought one along, but it's a white metal disc about this size. And then there's a rope that comes out from the middle of it. And on that rope, there's marks every foot, black marks every foot, and red marks every 6 inches. And what you do is you go to the deepest part of the lake in the middle of the lake, and you lower the Secchi disc over the side of the boat. And from the surface of the water, you count how many feet down it goes by looking at the rope. And so you kind of, I always count it as it goes down, and then I count it as it comes back up again too. So as it goes down, you count how many feet, and then at the point where it just disappears, where you can't really see it anymore, you pull it up where you can see it slightly, and that depth from the water surface to that disc is the clarity. So if it's, you know, that would be 20 feet, that Or you could also think of it as you could see the bottom of the lake, you know, in 20 feet deep. That's really good clarity. Common for the area, I think, I know Pelican Lake, well, Pelican Lake used to be about 12 feet. Now it's about 15 with the zebra mussels, but Detroit's probably around 12-ish as well, I'm thinking. Yeah. And so that's still pretty good. But if you think about an algae bloom, or if you've been to lakes in southern Minnesota, they have a lot different people that have different perception of what they'll swim in up here versus down there, just from what you're used to. I actually used to live down in southern Minnesota and would swim in lakes that had 1 or 2 foot clarity. I don't know if I would do that anymore now. We get spoiled up here. Because our lakes up here are just so nice in northern Minnesota, just really amazing water quality. But again, some of that, like Brent said, the reason that they're clearer like that is, first of all, they started out that way from when the glaciers left, but also there's less, you know, concentrated development, big cities in northern Minnesota compared to the lakes that are in Minneapolis are really pretty impaired, you could say, just from all the runoff from the city around it.
Sorry. And I think it's super interesting. I hope you do too. I learned that before, maybe touching on two things. Zebra mussels, good, bad. We just learned it's actually there's a good part to it when it comes to water clarity. But also maybe touch a little bit more on the runoff or what we actually trying to filter off, which is phosphorus, and maybe touch on those two elements. What do make allergies, and what I just.
So the main nutrient in the lake that feeds the plants and algae and makes the lake greener is phosphorus. And so if you think about putting fertilizer on your lawn so that your lawn or your garden grows better, you use fertilizer. So to the lake, phosphorus is like a fertilizer. It's going to make the lake more green. And runoff from fertilizer from people's yards, from dog waste, septic systems, just the dirt on the road or soil on shorelines, if you have exposed soil or shorelines that aren't natural and aren't holding that dirt down, that all has phosphorus in it, so that all can run into the lake, and then it causes the lake to get more green. So what we test for when we're testing a lake in our lakes program, when they take that water sample, we're testing it for phosphorus to see how much phosphorus is in the lake, and then we also test the algae concentration, which is related to that phosphorus. So the reason we want to slow down the runoff is so that we're not feeding the lake with more nutrients and more phosphorus.
Zebra mussels, you want to say something about that? Yeah? We hand it over then to... I'm sorry, no, it's okay. F. Nathan Olson, you speak Minnesota DNR fishery.
Yeah, I'm glad there's a remote or a microphone because I don't know if I have a cold or laryngitis or what. But my name is Nathan Olson. I work for the Minnesota DNR. My technical title is Area Fisheries Supervisor. I've been with the DNR for it'll be 14 years in June. Started out in the Twin Cities as a fisheries biologist. Moved to Ortonville as a transfer there to continue to do fishery biology work. Then eventually went to Fergus Falls to work with the invasive species program. And then from there now have come up to Detroit Lakes to work again with fisheries. So to kind of get back quick to zebra mussels, yeah, there's a this love-hate relationship, I guess you could say, for zebra mussels. So we do see clear water when zebra mussels become established. That's definitely what, I mean, Mariah has the data and we have the data in other water bodies to show that. From a fishery standpoint, what we're concerned about is the way that zebra mussels are clearing the water is they're filtering out these nutrients and the little tiny animals that are in the water that feed also on these nutrients. The thing is that those tiny animals are needed by almost all species of fish when they're in larval stage, when they're first born. And so if zebra mussels are basically robbing this food item from fish, our concern is what happens to the fish populations. And so, and from there, then it's just a cascading effect up the food chain. So since we've seen zebra mussels now in Big Cormorant and Lake Detroit, we have been trying to gather data on what we call, they're called zooplankton, are these little microscopic animals. We're trying to gather data on the zooplankton population just to see if we're seeing any changes. Now, Big Cormorant is a big concern to us because Big Cormorant is one of only three lakes in my fisheries management area where we do not stock walleyes. All the walleyes that exist in Big Cormorant are naturally reproducing, and we want to keep it that way because it's obviously more expensive for us to begin to try to stock walleyes. And a lot of times, we could never stock walleyes in a lot of these lakes to augment what natural reproduction can do on its own. And so, in addition to the possible food chain effects of zebra mussels, with clearer water, a lot of times we see more aquatic plant growth. And for people that don't like weeds, this is, can, if they're already having an issue, they could have more issues with the clearer water. So that's one thing that is a nuisance that a lot of people see. And then finally is just the presence of zebra mussels and their abundance. If anyone has seen samples, I know Brent has some over here at his booth, they become very abundant. And so if people are swimming or trying to recreate at all, there's a chance that you can become injured or cut your feet or something on them. So so those are some of the issues with zebra mussels that that we commonly see. Do you want to just continue on with what I do? Okay, so besides trying to monitor zooplankton populations, since we are fisheries, obviously we manage the fisheries within a 5 or 6 county area, Becker County, Manoman County. We go all the way up to Polk County, almost to Grand Forks. We also have the Red River. So we have a number of water bodies that we manage, and we're responsible for monitoring these water bodies to monitor their fish populations to make sure regulations or potentially additional stocking isn't needed. And it all kind of ties into the water quality aspect because whatever water is coming at a lake does affect eventually what your fish population could be. So if we start to see super abundant water, like for example, Lake Sally that used to have very turbid or not very clear water, if you look back at our fisheries reports, the black bullhead abundance was really through the roof. Now, since the city of Detroit Lakes has kind of gotten a handle on its wastewater treatment plant, we continue to see water level or water clarity improve. And with that, we see much less bullheads in the lake. And commonly, people come that are older than me or you. commonly, we see people that stop by the office, and they remember the days when we also operate a hatchery by Detroit Lakes. But they remember the days when we would gather the walleyes in the spring. We would actually give people bullheads. And so we'd have people that would come down by the truckloads, and they would get bullheads from us. And they always ask, "Do you still give bullheads away?" And we're like, "No, we don't really see as many bullheads as we did in the past." And a lot of it has to do with the improvements in water clarity. And so, we have, obviously there's a lot of lake. I don't know how many in Becker County, 100. I mean, we obviously don't get to all lakes because not all have public accesses. We are limited to lakes that have public accesses to do our work. And so we are at least 100 different lakes in my area that I try to manage. And so we have most of the lakes we try to get to every 5 years. Some, they're not as popular, or they don't see as much pressure. And so we might only get to those every 7 or 10. To evaluate the fisheries, we use nets. And so we have trap nets, which are kind of based near shore. And those are meant to try to catch bluegills or crappies, bass to some extent. And then we also use gill nets, which are set offshore, and they're really meant to try to monitor the walleyes and the northern pike and the yellow perch populations. And so we have set locations on the lakes that we set the nets in the same spot roughly at the same time of year. And so as you develop over 10 or so surveys over 50 years, you get sort of an idea of what the fishery population is doing. And so pretty much my crew, Tyler over there in our booth is part of it. We will be on two lakes a week all summer, beginning from June to the end of August, just trying to get these baseline surveys just to do routine monitoring. Again, we have the hatchery, so in the springtime, we do take walleye eggs from Lake Sally. It's right at the Lake Sally and Muskrat connection. If anyone's familiar with Dutton Locks County Park at Detroit Lakes, that's where our building is. And so in the spring, we set up a trap, and basically what we do is the walleyes are naturally following the water flow. So water's coming from Detroit to Muskrat to Sally, and they're just following that water up into the rapids. And we just have a net that funnels them in, and then we can separate them out from females and males, take the eggs from the females when they're ready, fertilize them with the sperm, and then our hatchery is right there. We just cart them up to our hatchery and hatch those fish. A lot of them go to lake stocking, and then a lot of them also go to natural wetlands that we use as what we call walleye rearing ponds. And so we put those fish, they're the size of a mosquito when they're first born, or like a little fry, we call them. And we put them in May, and then around the first part of October is when we start to try to harvest those out of the wetlands. And then they're fingerlings. There should be about 5 or 6 inches. And then we take those and stock those into some lakes. Some lakes do better with fry stocking. Some do better with a fingerling, a bigger size fish. And then all of our survey work tells us whether or not our stocking is kind of working. And so I guess in a nutshell, quickly, That's what we do. We also don't just have fisheries at the same office. We have forestry, wildlife, ecological and water resource staff. So there's several different divisions. I'm with the Division of Fish and Wildlife. And so if you have any other issues, you can also come to our office. I'm sure someone can help.
So something Nathan said reminded me too how there's a lot of, and maybe some of this is in the Twin Cities metro area, but there's a lot of doom and gloom about that all our lakes are just getting worse. But that's actually not true, because we have that data that the volunteers have collected every year. If we have 10 years of data in a row, we can actually analyze the trend of that lake and see if it's getting better, getting worse, or just stable, just staying the same. And I would say most of the lakes, we've looked at the data from a lot of counties in northern Minnesota, and most of the lakes are stable. And then there are some that are increasing, getting better, and some that are getting worse, but really not a lot are getting worse. One of those reasons, which both Brent and Nathan have talked about, is back before the Clean Water Act, before the 1970s, people used to straight pipe sewage into lakes. We just didn't know back then. Also with mining, putting mining tailings in the lake. So once we cleaned that up, our lakes really bounced back. So the good news is if you can find the source of the phosphorus and fix that, the lake will rebound. It can correct itself. And a lot of our lakes, probably Detroit and Sally, are some good examples that are still recovering from that past sewage in the lake. I mean, the bacteria, that stuff's not around anymore, but the phosphorus that's in there, it just sits down at the bottom of the lake, and it takes a long time to break that down. So we're still, especially these lakes that are by cities, are still improving from that pre-1970s nutrient influx. This is back, you know, before the Clean Water Act, when rivers used to catch on fire. Like we're recovering from that, and we're doing well. But we want to make sure we keep what we've fixed and not go backwards in that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And we have a question in the audience. Mariah.
That's like asking me my favorite kid. No. actually, I think I would say Leech Lake because that's the lake I grew up going to, and I my parents still have a cabin on that lake, so I go there every summer. And it's also a really interesting lake because it's kind of like five lakes in one. so many different bays. It's a reservoir, has a dam at the outlet. So some bays are like a shallow lake, and then Walker Bay is, what, almost 200 feet deep, I think. So it's just a really interesting lake for a limnologist as well. Plus, I have that personal tie to it. So that'd be my favorite. But I do love all the lakes, too.
Excellent question. I find a beautiful answer, and I think I can sum this up. Thank you very much. This lake life, which is fairly new to me, I'm, as you may hear, relocate to the area, and I enjoy lake life only for the past 5 years. What I learned, though, and why I'm doing this, is we are creating memories. So the question, which is your favorite lake? The answer must be the lake that I was introduced to from a kid, I guess, right? That's where, so this lake life that we all enjoy and live, I hope, is really something so unique and beautiful and Minnesota and personal. So I put this on to show what is being done to keep the water the way it is. I find it's really good resources, and I'm glad that you guys are here and that you are here wanting to learn about the water to keep it as healthy as it is today, I hope. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for coming. And if you have additional questions, feel free to approach our speakers. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.